Let's light this candle.
Just keep cranking away.
Take that and think about that for a little
while. Wow, bro.
You are listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Just got to keep getting better and keep that desire. Keep getting hungrier every single week and know that we still have potential that we can unlock. So we just got to keep getting better, stay hungry, and stay humble, and know that we got a long way to go still.
You are listening to Cap and Company live from San Diego, brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. We are behind the scenes with the baseball winter meetings on ESPN 1000.
Do you slide on all your nights like this?
Good morning. Welcome to Cap and Company one more time from San Diego, California, where I think I'll be looking for a new executive producer because Danny's going to live here and stay here. I'm David Kaplan. Chris Black is at the controls as he always is. He's the associate producer, and you hear him every weekend on the college football coverage, and he and Abdallah do a show. Anyway, welcome in to ESPN 1000. Behind the Seams, sponsored by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer, but we'll do a lot of football today as well. It's Bears and Packers Sunday at Lambeau Field. But a lot going on here at the MLB Winter Meetings. Danny, we saw another big deal go down last night. I spent about 30 minutes with Scott Boras yesterday. He came on TV with us, and he said, I think I might have something for you guys in a couple hours. I go, why don't we break it right now? He said, just look for a big deal tonight. And 2 hours later, it was Anthony Rendon of the LA Angels of Anaheim for $245 million. And that will have some impact on what the Cubs can do if they do indeed choose to move Chris Bryant. We could talk about those implications in a little bit. But the interesting thing was talking to Scott Boras about Chris's grievance, where he felt that he was wronged by the Cubs holding him in the minors one day longer than he felt he should have been, and that left him just a day short of service time in 2015, meaning he's a free agent in two more years, not 1 year. And so he filed a grievance through the Players Association. Wasn't that Scott filed it? It was Chris filing it through the Players Association, but they hired attorneys through the union. And it's now in the arbitrator's hands. And Scott said to us, guys, I'm just telling you, do yourself a favor and see if you can read the facts in the case, if they'll allow you to. And he said, I'm telling you that don't believe that he is definitely going to lose. He said he may by the letter of the law, but he said the spirit of the law says you are a free agent after 6 years of play, not let me hold you out one day so I can get a seventh year out of you. Now, everyone I've asked in MLB says that by doing this grievance, they're still going to lose because if you don't like the rule the way it's worded, change the rule. But the rule is what the rule is. But Scott said they're not convinced 100% that they're going to lose. So we'll see. I can tell you, he feels that the kid was wronged, and as does the family. The Cubs feel they were just playing by the system. There's a lot of other teams that have done the same thing, but it would send shockwaves through Major League Baseball if he wins, because there would be players all around the game that would automatically see an extra year of service time taken away, or added, I mean, and he would be free agents that much more quickly. Now, with Rendon to the Angels, here's the state of the third base market that the Cubs are waiting on. Theo has said, we got to let these free agents play out. You have teams looking for a third baseman that have acknowledged it publicly here. That would be the Braves, Rangers, Dodgers, Phillies. Those four for sure. You have the Angels crossed off the list, and Josh Donaldson's going somewhere. So wherever Josh Donaldson ends up, the other three teams are going to be actively looking to trade to get a third baseman. While we were here, the Colorado Rockies made it known to everybody, we'll trade Nolan Arenado, but it's going to take a massive package of talent to get him. The problem they're running into is he's owed well over $200 million, where you can get Chris Bryant for a good package of talent and only have to owe him somewhere between $43 and $48 million based on arbitration projections. Now, you get Arenado for 7 years. You get Chris Bryant for just two.
So they're all weighing all of this. So we'll talk about it with Jesse Rogers when he stops by at 10:25 and get his thoughts on where this all sits. The Cubs also met with a free agent Japanese center fielder who's not a great player, but is somebody that a lot of teams are interested in because he gets on base and he's pretty solid defensively. Now, again, not a great player, not a big-dollar player. But, you know, talking with Jim Hendry yesterday, the Yankees felt it was important in 2018 to reset on the luxury tax. So they took a step back payroll-wise, despite having revenues that dwarf the industry. Yankee revenues, they do not have to report their ownership stake in the YES Network, which is worth north of $5 billion. So without that, without the soccer team that they own a percentage of, the Yankees still bring in revenues of $668 million. The White Sox, $400 million less on a yearly basis. The Cubs, about $200 million less. The Red Sox, about $140 million less. That's how much financial might the Yankees have. So the Cubs are trying to get under the luxury tax to reset. The Red Sox are trying to get under the luxury tax to reset. And the Astros reportedly are trying to get under the luxury tax and reset. So that's where this whole financial thing sits. Now, I looked up the financial structure of where certain teams are. White Sox have a ton of room. But the Cubs, if you look at where they're at right now, the first luxury tax threshold is 208. With all the guys that they've gotten rid of so far, Cishek, Strope, Morrow, Zobrist, Cole Hamels, the Cubs are still at $214,005,000. $214 million. And the second luxury tax threshold is, I think, at 228. So you look where the Cubs are, they do not have much in the way of wiggle room, and they want to get under 208 so they can reset. That means before you add anything to your bullpen, you've got to move a bunch of money out of here. A bunch. That's why they're in this predicament to try and get under the luxury tax. So we'll see where this all heads. Chris Bryant's arbitration projection right now is $18,500,000. Avi Baez, 9.3. Schwarber, $8 million. Wilson Contreras will go from making no money to $4.5 million. Almora, despite an awful year, will project all the way up to $1.8 million. Kyle Ryan goes from minimum salary to $1.1 million. You add all that up, and that's why they're sitting in luxury tax hell. 312-332-3776. Theo told us yesterday that they've had a lot of great talks, but they've got to wait until some of these other big contracts are decided, Rendon being one of those big chips. We've seen the free agent pitching start to come off the board. This morning, Rick Porcello to the Mets. The Mets also signed Michael Wacha. Those are two okay arms, and both guys got right around $10 million. Tanner Roark got $12 million a year. I mean, we're talking about real mediocre pitching. Real mediocre. And that's the cost of doing business now, so that's why they're trying to move money. Danny, how are you, kid?
I'm doing great, Cap. It's good to be here. Let me ask you a question. When we came out here, we headed here Sunday, mm-hmm. we were excited for a big week at the winter meetings. Mm-hmm. We knew that the Cubs were going to make some moves. They were going to clear some major league players off their roster in mm-hmm. hopes of getting some prospects. Mm-hmm. And we thought the White Sox were going to pull out their checkbooks, and they were going to make some of these big signings. There have been big signings here since we've been here, mm-hmm. but not by the Chicago teams.
Right.
Are you shocked that there's been less action from the Cubs and Sox at this point?
No, I'm not, because you know, you look at the Cubs, and they've had a bunch of meetings with different teams looking for a third baseman and a catcher. San Diego Padres, again yesterday, said they reengaged with Theo, and they said it's absurd what he's asking for. He's asking for the best in their system, multiple. And they're like, no. We're not going to get all of our best prospects together and then just push them all in for 3 years guaranteed with Wilson Contreras. They said, we'll make you a fair offer. That's absurd what you're asking for. But I think I relayed this yesterday on the show. I know I did on television. Multiple GMs said that when you walk into a room and Jim Hendry is the guy negotiating at the other end, he said, it doesn't take long. He's fair. He said, hey, I'm not going to BS with you here. Here's the deal. I'm trading you Danny Zetterman. Here's what he's worth. That's what I want. And he goes in, you negotiate, and you come up a little here, and you go down a little bit, and you make a fair deal. And both guys walk out and go, I made a fair deal, because we have to do business again down the road. He said, with Theo, he said, give him credit. You walk in and you go, yeah, I'd like to trade you Albert Elmore, and I want two of the greatest players in your system. And they're like, for Albert Elmore? He said, he tries to make you think the guy he's giving you is one of the greatest players to ever be in the sport. He said, so you've got to cut through all that. He goes, and I give him credit, trying to make a tough, hard, good deal. But he said, holy smokes, it is different dealing with different guys. He said, some of the other GMs will be, okay, yeah, that guy struggled. Let's make a fair deal. That's not the way Theo operates.
Well, besides Theo trying to get the most for his players, which he absolutely should, that's why he's the best.
But you also got to remember, you have to deal with those people again. And as one GM said to me, if you kill a guy in a trade, absolutely murder him, he's going to be reticent to come back and deal with you again. It's a small industry. Be fair.
Well, and besides that, now they're waiting for Josh Donaldson to go. Jesse wrote a great piece on ESPN.com today about Chris Bryant and where he'll go in this process. Now that Rendon signed with the Angels, Chris Bryant basically has to wait for Josh Donaldson to sign somewhere, and then the remaining teams in search of a third baseman will all be vying for that. Jesse says the perfect fit is the Atlanta Braves because they'll give up top prospects to bring in Chris Bryant for 2 years because they believe that's their window to win,
right,
and maybe let him walk after free agency. So right now it's a waiting game on the Cubs side. On the Sox side, I'm a little surprised they didn't. There were players to be had here. They talked about how they wanted to make this team better, and they did not pull out the checkbook at all. They made a minor move 2 days ago, which really didn't move the meter, and they're still waiting. One thing about the Rendon deal that was shocking to me, would you say the Angels are the second team in L.A.?
Yes.
And the White Sox are the second team in Chicago?
Yes.
How come the Angels can afford to have two players on their roster making $35 million a year, and the White Sox can't even have one?
That's a legitimate question. Here's my question to you, though. The Angels, by their own admission here, have zero pitching. So Gerrit Cole called Angels management 2 days ago because it was basically 6 weeks ago that he was going there. Done. He was going to be an Angel. He wanted to be home. He went to UCLA. He went to high school 7 miles from Anaheim Stadium. It was going to be done. And then the Yankees flew out and met with him. And they said to him and to his wife, here's the deal. We're not going to even go down the road with you if you tell us I'm staying in the on the West Coast. But if you're willing to listen, we'd like to have you come out to New York, see what being a Yankee's all about, and are you open at least to looking? And he and his wife said, yes, we are. And so they set up a meeting in New York, and Andy Pettit was involved in the meeting. That was Gerrit Cole's favorite player growing up. He grew up in California, but he loved the Yankees. That was his team. And he loved Andy Pettit, how he did his business, all of it. He just thought, that's my guy. And so Andy Pettit said, dude, if you want to be on the biggest stage, if you want to try and win a World Series, if you want to feel like you're in the Beatles, here's where you want to be, nowhere else. This is New York, and they're back. They got under the luxury tax a year ago. They reset. They're coming back, and they've got a great young team. They need you at the top of the rotation so that in the World Series, they hand the ball to you, and they know they're winning. And he said, I'm in. And so he called the Angels, and he said, look, the Angels' offer was at $300 million. They would have gone to the level the Yankees did. And he told the Angels, look, I'm trying to win a World Series right now. You're not there. You're not ready. You'll have me and Trevor Cahill. Who else? We don't have any pitching here. And the Angels said, yeah, we're not at the spot the Yankees are. We agree. Good luck to you. And he agreed to the deal that night with the Yankees. That's how that went down.
Yeah, but that story just illustrates the point I just made to you. The second team in L.A., a major city, the second team that nobody really cares about. I've been to L.A. zillions of times. I have family
Correct,
there.
But they also it's have a Dodger huge time. TV deal.
Dodger town. So now they're offering Garrett Cole $300 million, and they have Mike Trout at over $35 million a year, and they have Rendon at $35 million
a year. Well, they wouldn't have signed
but
both
But the White
Cole
Sox can't make one like, I'm just – listen, I'm not trying to bash the Sox. I think what the Sox are doing is a great thing. But we came here with high hopes and anticipation that the White Sox were going to really make the team better in the winter meetings, and it's been very quiet on their front. Yeah. There have been players to be had, and their checkbooks have not come out. And I'm wondering, and if I'm a Sox fan, I'm wondering, what are we waiting for?
What players were there to be had? They were not literally. We were told yesterday they could literally have walked up to Garrett Cole and
forget Garrett Cole. We keep going back to Garrett Cole. I'm Garrett Cole'd out. He wasn't going to the White Sox. You never thought he was going to the White Sox. Yeah. The White Sox aren't the Yankees. I get it. But what about the rest of the – like, there's a lobby full of agents with players to sign that can help the White Sox.
Those guys are still out there.
Well, let's get moving. What are we waiting for?
Danny, if you walk in to the car dealer and go, I like that car. How much? I'll take it. You want to negotiate. No. You want to try and get
it's certainly not hurting Scott Boras. He's negotiated almost $1 billion worth of deals.
Four guys, $878 million.
So, I mean, that doesn't hold up.
He still has Hyun-Jin Ryu. He still has Nicholas Castellanos. He still has Dallas Keuchel, who I think would be a fit with the White Sox.
Okay, so let's go talk to him. Let's make it happen.
Scott told us on TV last night that he's seeing the Sox much more engaged, that they feel their window is starting to open. Not quite there yet, but he said you have to get veteran pitching to lead a staff. He goes, Garrett Cole, this is his client. Scott said, in Pittsburgh, he was good. He had great stuff, but he wasn't this guy. But he said he got to Houston, and he sat down and met with Justin Verlander and with Dallas Keuchel. And who was the other one he told us? There was another pitcher down there. And these guys said, dude, what is with all the breaking balls you throw? You got a 99-mile-an-hour fastball. That's got to be your bread and butter. He said, and they started talking pitching strategy. He goes, and where did Garrett Cole go? From here to the stratosphere. And now he's a Yankee with an insane contract. So it's just, they're not there yet. I think they're coming. I think they've got good young players. It's cyclical, man. It's coming. It's going to take time. I know people get frustrated. Now, the thing that I find very disappointing is where the Cubs are at. And it's not the fact that they're trying to reset under the luxury tax. That's intelligent. I get it. You cannot go from 2012 draft to 2019 and have developed zero pitching, have very little to show from your farm system, and go, yeah, we've got this amazing team. You have good players there that have won 84 games. And so far to date, in, what, nine drafts, they've done nothing. They've really struggled. Chris Bryant, a blind man could have picked. He was sitting at number two. Name me another draft pick that you look and go, wow, that was an amazing draft choice. Give me one.
Amazing. You can't point to another one that's amazing.
Like where is the Cubs' Ronald Acuna Jr.? Where is the Cubs' Juan Soto? They spend tens of millions of dollars on draft picks, international signings. Where are those guys? Now, I know they traded Gleyber Torres and Eloy Jimenez. I get it. But you can't trade Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease, two of your best prospects, and get back what you got back. You just can't. And then you go out and sign all these other guys, and nobody is a superstar? Nobody? That, for me, is why they're in the position that they're in. They've done an awful job developing talent. Awful. That's where your anger should be. Not what they're spending on what they're spending in the minor leagues and in international free agency and doing absolutely nothing with it. Hey, guys, are you ready to heat things up this Christmas? Go with a win-win this year. Give her something that'll make her feel hot and heat up your holiday, too. How? With the super warm, world-famous hoodie footie from our friends at Pajamagram. Danny's been wearing one around San Diego. Let's face it, it's hard to be hot when she's freezing cold. The hoodie footie is the ultimate solution because it combines the warmth of a hoodie with the coziness of footy pajamas. Head-to-toe warmth means she'll be cozy in no time, and it gets even better. because every Pajamagram includes free gift packaging. That's like icing on the cake for you because it means you don't have to wrap a thing. They're also backed by a 100% lifetime guarantee, and delivery by Christmas is guaranteed, so you risk nothing. Want more? Pajamagram is celebrating 10 years of Hoodie Footy. So right now, for a limited time, you could save $10 on adult-size Hoodie Footies when you use the code SAVE10 at checkout. Go to Pajamagram.com today and use code SAVE10. That's Pajamagram.com, SAVE10, and tell them Cap sent you. 312-332-3776. Love to hear your thoughts. Cubs fans, Sox fans, are you frustrated? Are you... It's a process. Let's just slow down here. Love to hear your thoughts. 312-332-3776. We'll be right back.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. You're listening to Cap and Company live from San Diego. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. We are behind the scenes with the baseball winter meetings on ESPN 1000.
Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play.
All right, welcome back. ESPN 1000 with Danny Zetterman, Chris Bleck. I'm David Kaplan. Danny and I are in San Diego one more day. I land at O'Hare at like 12:30 tonight. And then we'll be back in the studio tomorrow morning. So Danny gets to fly direct. What time is your flight?
I take off today at like 1:20 local time, 3:20 Chicago time.
Yeah, I've got to do TV in the afternoon, and I will be on a flight. Me, Danny Wysocki, and Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago, we have to fly because you're on the last direct nonstop. We have to go San Diego to Phoenix, lay over at Sky Harbor Airport, and then Phoenix to Chicago.
That's why you make the big bucks. I'm surprised that your bosses at TV allow the three of you to be on the same plane. God forbid it went down.
You know what?
Your whole staff, really? I mean, you guys are the three brain trusts of that whole place.
Do we have to really talk about plane crash on the damn flight?
What, if I say it, it's going to happen?
Yeah. Anyway. All right. We got the news yesterday here in San Diego that Ken Harrelson, we call him Hawk, is going into the Hall of Fame. I thought the call that he got, we had it, we played it on TV and on radio, was so awesome to see the emotion that he was overcome with, because it's the ultimate tribute to your career, and he joins us now. Hawk, first of all, congratulations. Take me back to that moment when that phone rings and it's Tim Mead of the Hall of Fame. How fast is your heart pounding?
Well, it's first of all, good morning. it was exciting. You know, they had called me a few days earlier, said they were calling all the, you know, the guys involved in it, and they were going to call around 11 o'clock. So I'm sitting here right where I am right now, and 11 o'clock comes, no call, 11:05, 11:10, 11:15. You know, so it got to be about 11:25, and I'm thinking to myself, well, all right, Hawk, we got to wait more. We got to wait longer. And 10 seconds later, the phone rang. When I picked up the phone, it said Cooperstown. And I just didn't know what to say, Cap. I mean, you know, it was just something that, you know, since you're a kid, you dream about. And dreams, you know, do come true. So it's something that I thought that I would go in, but I figured it might be, you know, after I was deceased, after I was 6 feet under. And this way, now getting it, it means I can share this with my family, my beautiful wife, Eris, and our beautiful daughter, Krista, our handsome son, Casey, and our grandchildren, Nico, Alexander, and Hank. And I can share this with them and the rest of the family for a while.
Yeah, it was really cool, Hawk, to watch the video of that call. And then I had Jim Thome with me yesterday, and he said, I can't begin to tell you. He goes, when I signed my first contract, I went, wow, I'm a Major League Baseball player. He goes, then I get called up, and I'm like, wow, I'm actually playing in the big leagues. But he said, to be there and to walk in and to get the call and to see your bust, he goes, I literally started crying. I can't believe there's Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth, or for broadcasters, there's Jack Buck or Harry Carey or Jack Brickhouse. Hawk Harrelson lives on forever. That's got to be the coolest feeling of all time.
Yeah, well, first of all, Jim Tomey's one of the nicest human beings I've ever met in my whole life.
He is.
And hit 612 home runs like he did. And I was fortunate enough to be on the call when he hit his 500th. And I'll never forget the plane ride we had that he was having some trouble getting to 500. And I think he was just putting too much pressure on himself. So we started talking on the plane coming back to Chicago. And I told him, I said, Jimmy, I said, you know, we got to stop thinking about 500. We got to start getting you prepped to hit 600. And he looked at me with a funny look, and he said, what? What'd you say? I said, we got to get you ready to hit 600. And sure enough, the next day we played, and he hit a home run in that game, and then he hit, you know, we were at home when he hit his 500th, and I had tears in my eyes for that because, you know, there's a difference. You know, if the guy is an asshole, then if he hits his 500th, you just pat him on the butt and say, you know, nice going, you know. But when you get guys like Mark Burley, who pitched, you know, a perfect game, which is my all-time greatest thriller in 42 years of announcing, outside of, you know, 05 White Sox World Series. But when you get guys like, you know, Burley and Tomey and Robin Ventura and the big hurt Frank Thomas doing these accomplishments, guys I love, I really love them. I like sons, you know. And it's something special. And to be in the Hall of Fame, as I said, is such an honor because you dream about it as a kid. And all of a sudden now you play baseball. And I felt the same way that Jimmy did. You know, I got to the big leagues at a very young age. And I remember having tears the first time I walked into Yankee Stadium because here's a kid out of Savannah, Georgia, you know, and Whitey Ford was pitching that day and Yogi Berra was catching. So, I mean, you know, do the math. That's quite emotional. And going into Cooperstown is the same thing.
Hawk, when you look back, you mentioned the Mark Burley perfect game, and I remember watching that in our newsroom going, oh, my God, I can't imagine being on the call for something like that. But there were other incredible moments because day by day you do 162 baseball games or thereabouts. There are games where maybe the game doesn't mean that much or maybe that specific play doesn't mean that much, but your calls live on forever. What are some of your favorites that you look back now that you think, that was fun doing that, man?
Well, you know, I've called Philip Humber had a perfect game out in Seattle, and, of course, Burley had his at home. I think I've called outside of that, 11 no-hitters. And one of my favorite calls also was doing something that maybe never be happening again. And that was in Detroit when Paul Konerko, one of my all-time favorite players, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. He's on the ballot this year. He had, you know, 432 home runs, over 1,200 RBIs. But he hit his 300th home run. And the next hitter was Jermaine Dye. And he hit his 300th home run. So two guys hitting their 300th home runs in consecutive at-bats, and that might never happen again. So there have been so many things, you know, as I said, in my career, even when, you know, I was with the Red Sox for 7 years, and I did 2 years with the Yankees and 33 with the White Sox. And during that time, you know, that's three pretty good ball clubs. And you're going to have a lot of times. I had a chance. Ned Martin was my partner, and I had a chance. I was doing the play-by-play when Yastrzemski was going after his 400th home run. And I deferred to Ned because Ned had been there a lot longer than I had. And Ned should be in the Hall of Fame, and he was on the ballot this year. But and then I also deferred to Ned when Carl was going after his 3,000th hit. And nobody in the American League had ever done that, 3,000 hits and 400 home runs. And I deferred to Ned so he could make the call. And as you're right, those calls will live, you know, forever because in the history of that franchise, in Burley and Tomey's 500th home run and Paulie and Jermaine's 300th home run in consecutive at-bats, you know, that's part of White Sox lore, so to speak. It's just a wonderful. You know, first of all, you got to have the opportunity. You got to have the players to do it. And Paulie, he got so many. You know, he's one of the. He's probably the second best fastball hitter that I've ever seen in the game. Period. Frank Howard, my former roommate when I was with Washington for a short time, he's the best fastball hitter I've ever seen. In fact, I talked to him the other day, and he calls me Fab. He goes, Fab, he says, you know, that number two and three, I couldn't handle too much. That's a curveball and the slider. And he said, you know what I call those, don't you? I said, what's that, Hondo? He said, I call those UFOs, unidentifiable flying objects. he said, but they couldn't get that number one by me very often. And that's the same way with Canerico was, and then seeing some of these guys, Robin Ventura, all the great clutch hits that he had. I could sit here, Cap, and talk to you for two or three weeks about some of the great players that I've had the pleasure and the honor of being around all these years, playing with and then playing against and then broadcasting.
Hawk, who will help you write your speech? Have you given any thought to it as you're, you know, laying down to go to sleep going, oh, God, I got to give a speech and everybody's going to be watching?
Well, yeah, AJ was here yesterday, Pierzynski. He and Robert Dameron. Robert, who was like, both those guys are like sons to me. You know, Aris and I love them to death. So they came over to see if I was going to get the call, and they were here when I got it. And then when it was over, I told, I was on a show, and I told, I forget who it was, that AJ was, I was going to let AJ do the speech. And they started laughing. I said, no, don't let that happen, because, you know, he's George Brett was the original Dennis the Menace, and AJ is Dennis the Menace too. But, no, the guy who wrote my book, Jeff Snook, we talked yesterday, and he's going to come up. He lives in South Florida. He's going to come up, and we're going to talk about it. And Jeff's just a terrific writer. And I'm going to get my wife to chip in on it. I'm going to get our daughter, Krista, to chip in on it. And I'm going to get our son, Casey, to chip in on it. So we'll have a collection of people sitting around trying to get that speech together, because I know, you know, Eric Nadell, who is a great announcer, and he's also in Cooperstown, he gave the greatest speech of any announcer I've ever heard. And he did half of it in English and half of it in Spanish. And it was just a great thing to hear. And then, of course, Euchre's speech is, you know, that's going to be saved for posterity forever. And, of course, Euchre's one of my dear friends. I love the guy. And he also is one of the funniest people that I've ever been around in my whole life. Hold on 1 second. There's somebody at the door right here.
We're talking to Hawk Harrelson here on ESPN 1000. We're behind the scenes of the winter meetings brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer. And Hawk elected yesterday to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He'll be enshrined in Cooperstown this July at the ceremonies, and he gets the Ford C. Frick Award. And, you know, Harry Carey got that award. Jack Brickhouse got that award. There's so many great. Jack Buck, Mel Allen. I mean, you're talking about the greats, Vin Scully of the game, the best of the best. And Hawk has put us on hold while he goes. And
I'm right. I hit back.
Phone. There you go. I got you back.
Yeah.
Hawk, I got to ask you, the White Sox, they have not done a lot yet, but I talked with Rick yesterday on the show, and he said, look, I've got the checkbook, but I've got to also be very careful that maybe our window is a year from now, and I don't want to push all my chips in the middle until I know exactly what I have in all these young kids. What do you think of this White Sox team going forward?
Well, going forward, it's going to be terrific. I mean, there's no question about that. I said last year at Sox Fest, I said by 2021 that this club was going to be a monster. You're going to be a beast. And I agree with Rick going forward, because you just can't go out right now, you know, and this money they're spending for some pitchers right now, to me, it's crazy. I mean, it's just crazy, because I can see paying a position player that way. But, you know, every time a pitcher throws a slider or a curveball, he's taking a chance on tearing his elbow up. And to sign these guys to 7- and 8-year contracts like they did for over, you know, $300 million, it's just ludicrous, because because of the fact that I would bet you right now, I would bet you right now that neither one of them gets 25 starts this year. And when you're paying that money, somebody was telling me earlier, I was on a couple of shows, that they're going to be getting right at $1 million an inning to pitch. But on the other side of that page, if I were an agent, I'd be doing exactly what Scott Boras is doing. You know, last year, his total combined salaries of his players was $2.2 billion.
How about that?
And the game, you know, when I signed, I was sports first free agent. And when I signed, and when Charlie Finley and I got into an argument, and he released me in that what they call the greatest pennant race in the history of the game, where you had the White Sox, the Red Sox, the Twins and the Tigers all within one game of each other with about a month to go. And at the time he released me, the only guy swinging a bat better than I was Yastrzemski, and Carl won the Triple Crown that year. But I was making $12,000 when he released me. The minimum was $6,000, and I was making $12,000. And 2 days later, when I signed with the Red Sox, I became the highest paid player in baseball. I got $150,000. And today, the highest paid player in baseball is what? Making $40 million a year. So that shows
crazy.
You how the game has changed over these years.
Hey, Hawk, congratulations. Could not be happier for you. You did it your way. Whenever the run ends and you go into the Hall of Fame, just know you look in the mirror and go, Hawk did it Hawk's way. You weren't a conformist, and that's what I love about you.
All right, Cap. Thanks, buddy.
God bless.
Take care. Travel safe.
See you, bud. Thanks. There you go. Ken Hawk Harrelson, Hall of Famer. Very, very cool. Like in week one, will the Packers make Mitchell beat them on Sunday? We'll hear from Mitchell Trubisky. We'll talk football with Rob Domofsky, Dan Wiederer, and then Carmen Yurko, the Waddle and Sylvie Show. I believe it's Waddle and maybe PB. I know PB's in with Tommy as well tomorrow. But again, 312-332-3776. That was Hawk Harrelson. He had to curse. It was funny. But that's our guy. We'll take a fast time out. We'll come right back. This is ESPN.
Live from San Diego all this week, we take you behind the scenes of the winter meetings with Cap and Company. Brought to you by White Claw Pure Hard Seltzer.
We're breaking down Bears and Packers. Rob Domofsky of ESPN will join us, plus Barstool Big Cat at 4 o'clock. We start at 2 on ESPN 1000.
Hey, welcome back, Cap and Company. Behind the scenes of the baseball winter meetings 2019 here in San Diego. We fly home late tonight. Danny goes home earlier. Heaven forbid he's here the rest of the day. Have you enjoyed your time in San Diego, Danny?
It's beautiful. I mean, listen, I've never spent much time in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Nick Friedell, our old buddy, has praised San Diego and said it's one of the best cities in America for years. And I always thought, it's good for retirement. He's right. It's like being in Hawaii, but actually on the mainland.
Yeah, it's a great city. But I invited Danny to go to dinner with us last night. All the TV people I'm here with, we have 8 people here from TV. We all went to dinner. We had a break after Scott Boras until we had to do our winter meetings live show at 10:30 last night, Chicago time. So we were going to dinner, I don't know, 6:30, 7. And I say, hey, Danny, want to go to dinner? We got like a 6:15, 6:30 reservation. No, I'll pass. That's way too early for me to dine. Really?
It wasn't that it was
better
too. Well, first of all, you guys said 6:15. Second of all, I got a wife and 3 kids at home. To have some downtime to be alone by myself is a great thing. So what I did is I went running, and I just got lost in the city. I think I ran 15 miles yesterday just through the city. I went to different neighborhoods. I checked out different places. I actually got a sense for the city. Then I went back to my hotel room, and I actually did something I never got to do. I binge-watched some random TV shows. It was great.
You're humble.
It was great.
All right, we've got Bears and Packers on Sunday at Lambeau Field. Matt Nagy yesterday met the media. We carry it as we do every Matt Nagy press conference live on ESPN 1000. And he was asked a question about the Packers wanting to make Mitchell play quarterback.
And after that first game, I think it was Tremont Williams said we wanted to make Trubisky play quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And how much better equipped is Trubisky now to quote unquote play quarterback?
Sure, he's. I feel like for Mitch, that the progressions that we go through within our offense, the schemes that we run that we're feeling more and more comfortable with as the weeks go by, are only going to get better and better. And so. Any quarterback, when you're running a scheme or a concept or a play or progression for the first time and you're seeing different things, and they do different things, it can be difficult. And so just the more reps we get, the more experience we get of in-game stuff, the better. So common sense says he should be a lot better now than what he was at the start of this year.
Okay, so that was Matt. And then Mitch Trubisky went to the podium. And he was asked, because Tremont Williams had made those comments, he was asked, does the comments from Tremont Williams motivate you?
I mean, I got enough motivation from the outside, and I guess that's even more motivation, but I didn't hear that. I don't really care. I didn't play the way I wanted to the first game. That's fairly obvious, so for him to say something about it, I mean, that's just an obvious statement, I guess. I want to play better, and got a great opportunity to do that this week.
There you go. So,
I thought it's very mature of Mitch, the way he handled that.
Right.
You know, this is a guy that asked for the TVs to be turned off earlier. He said, I didn't hear that. Do you believe he didn't hear that?
Comment.
Do you believe that he didn't hear Tremont Williams say that in week one? Because I don't. I would be willing to bet at some point they even asked him about it between week one and week two. But I thought the way Mitch handled it, and I'm usually pretty hard on Mitch, I thought that was a very mature way for him to handle
it. Yeah, I've seen a different Mitch over the last month, just the way he's handled things. I was talking to Olin Krutz and Alex Brown, and they said the same thing. They said, yeah, absolutely agree with you. We've seen a different guy take more ownership of the offense and basically has told Matt Nagy, no, here's what I need to do, and here's how we're doing it. I'm more comfortable on the move. That's it. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And when he went to the podium after they beat, I think, the Lions the first time, and he went, yeah, we won, but I got to be better. This is on me. I have to be better. It wasn't, well, my center's got to snap the ball. But, like, he completely has taken ownership and put it all on himself. So I really liked it. So we'll see. Hopefully they go in and beat the Packers.
It seems like in the Rams game when he was taken out of the game, obviously it was because of his hip injury, but at the time everybody thought he was being benched. Mm-hmm. It seems like he had one of those moments where he woke up and he realized, this NFL career is short, mm-hmm. and mine might be real short if I don't start taking ownership and playing better.
Correct.
And it seems like he really made that leap.
Yeah, hopefully it continues. 312-332-3776 is our phone number. Let's grab a fast timeout. We will get the Packer update from the best Packer reporter in the business. He's our guy. He is Rob Domofsky from ESPN. He covers the Packers 24/7. He joins us on ESPN 1000 next.